The S&P futures sitting at 76.72 this morning, down about 18.75 points, is mild by historical standards. But it's worth tracking against the financial stories we're watching today because the underlying pressures are not mild. Let's start with the Treasury bond buyback story because I think it's being underreported relative to its significance. An economist, this appears to be a prominent figure in sovereign debt analysis, though the reporting doesn't name them by name, is characterizing Treasury's recent bond buyback program as financial repression. That's a technical term with a specific meaning. Financial repression refers to policies where the government uses regulatory or administrative mechanisms to maintain interest rates below the rate of inflation, effectively transferring wealth from savers to the sovereign borrower. The classic historical example is the period after World War II, when the Federal Reserve maintained an interest rate cap that helped the U.S. government inflate away a portion of its wartime debt burden.
The claim is that by buying back its own bonds, essentially retiring older, lower-yielding debt, and replacing it with new issuance at whatever the current market rate is, Treasury is manipulating the yield curve in ways that serve the government's financing interests at the expense of holders of those securities. Whether you call that financial repression or just active debt management depends partly on what assumptions you make about intent and partly on what the empirical effect on real yields actually is.
What makes this more than an academic argument is the TIC data, the Treasury International Capital data, showing that foreign investors sold $29 billion in short-term Treasury bills in June alone while simultaneously buying $181 billion in U.S. equities. That's a very specific rotation. They're not abandoning the dollar. They're not abandoning American assets. They're specifically moving out of sovereign debt instruments and into corporate equities.
Which tells you something nuanced about what sophisticated foreign investors believe right now. They still want dollar-denominated exposure. They still believe in American corporate earnings potential. But they don't want to be holding the government's IOUs, especially short-term ones that are particularly sensitive to interest rate policy. That's a vote of no confidence in U.S. fiscal management specifically, not in the American economy broadly.
And into that gap, the gap created by declining foreign demand for T-bills, some people in Washington are apparently looking at stablecoins. The logic goes, if dollar-pegged stablecoins become widely adopted globally for trade settlement and savings, they create synthetic demand for U.S. dollar assets because every stablecoin in circulation requires backing in dollar-denominated instruments. It's a clever idea in theory. The policy and regulatory questions around it are enormous.
The stablecoin as T-bill substitute argument assumes that the regulatory framework for stablecoins gets resolved in a way that mandates high-quality dollar asset backing, that adoption is broad enough to be fiscally meaningful, and that foreign governments don't view dollar stablecoin proliferation as a financial sovereignty threat and push back. Each of those assumptions is contestable.
Toyota dropping gas-only RAV4 models connects to this financial picture in an indirect but real way. The RAV4 is one of the best-selling passenger vehicles in the United States, consistently in the top 3 or 4 annually. If Toyota is fully committing to plug-in variants for its flagship mass-market SUV, that's a signal about where the company's leadership believes consumer demand and regulatory requirements are headed. It also has implications for oil demand forecasting, for automotive sector employment in communities that produce internal combustion components, and for the semiconductor supply chain that plug-in vehicles require.
The surge in plug-in sales that's driving Toyota's decision is partly consumer preference and partly a response to fuel cost volatility. Every time oil prices spike, because of something like, say, Iranian threats in the Strait of Hormuz, it accelerates the economic case for electrification. These stories connect in ways that aren't always obvious.